listener production.
Welcome back to the Howie Games, episode 74, featuring Joe and Renee Ingalls. You're about to listen to part B of the show. Enjoy.
So, why don't you tell me the story of your family, Renee? You've got a couple of twins.
We got
Jacob and Miller, and that's one of the reasons we're here as well.
Yeah, they turned three last week, which is just, it's insane to me to say that we've got three-year-old kids, because it's just, I mean, it feels like yesterday that they were born. So the fact that we've survived 3 years, crazy.
I know that you've got to pick Jake up, so you keep an eye on the clock, mate.
And
when you need to go, you go.
I mean, having kids, I think, in both of our sporting careers, with us as a couple, with us as a family, it's why we're on the earth. Like, there's no better thing than being a parent. So it's been a whirlwind of a three-year journey. It's been insane, and logistically our lives are nuts. I don't know how we do it sometimes, but we make it work. But I can honestly say a greatest achievement in our lives in the world right now is that we've got Jacob and Miller, healthy, happy three-year-old twins.
Tell us the story of Jacob.
Jacob is in a lot of ways just like his dad. Loves cars, pretty laid back.
I saw
back.
An old car out in the driveway. What's that?
It's a Toyota Camry.
Oh, I don't think it was a Toyota Camry.
It's a 65 Mustang.
Okay.
It was a
30th birthday present.
Gift. But yeah, I do have a little hobby, I guess you call it.
Finally, an NBA player tendency. Cars coming.
But I actually bought it for
right.
him. So,
it's not a Ferrari.
Okay. Anyway, let's put the cars to the side. You tell me about okay, you tell me about your young fella.
Yeah, Jacob's the most gentle, affectionate, kind little boy I think you could ever come across. It's been a pretty challenging, probably 12 months, we'd have to say.
For those that don't know the story of Jacob,
Why? In January, on January 8th right. was diagnosed with autism.
Can you tell me how that takes place and what it's like as parents?
Yeah. The first thing we'd have to say is it's been really tough.
Yeah.
I think even before the diagnosis, to cut a long story short, the diagnosis day came, it was all the last part of a really long assessment process. We sat down, we were told that he had autism, and we were shocked. And I'm not sure why we were shocked, because it had been a long process. We'd probably in the lead up to that spoken a lot about the fact that he probably was going to get the diagnosis of autism. However, I guess we're pretty positive, happy-go-lucky people, and in the back of our minds we're like, yeah, but he doesn't have that diagnosis yet, so he might not have autism.
We knew enough about it at that point to know that we were more than likely going to get a yes to him being it. But
what is it? What is autism from your understanding?
The easiest way to sum it up for us is probably developmental delay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and I think some of the
which comes with a lot of branches, I guess.
And that's the thing with autism. We can't give you one specific thing or anything about it, really, because it looks so many different ways. And when we talk about it, a spectrum, there are so that spectrum's huge, and it looks so
from
many different
like
ways.
Like mild
for different
to severe
people.
Is like and completely different.
No two autistic children or no two autistic people are ever going to look the same or present the same.
So when you are given that diagnosis for the little man that you obviously love to bits, what happens when you walk out of a room in a situation like that?
Not much, yeah. I think we, like I said, we were confident knowing that we knew enough that we were more than likely going to get the answer we assumed, but still hearing it from, like, we're sitting like we are now kind of thing, and the doctor's there, and it's like, yep. And I think we said, like, I don't think we spoke, like, the whole way home. It was just like a...
just edit Jacob in the back seat, really. Like,
yeah, like Jacob's, we're driving home, and it's just like, you just kind of lost for words, I guess. And one thing I do remember was like walking back in the house, and we were, I guess, lucky at the time that Renee's parents and stuff were over for Christmas and whatever. But just walking back in, and it was like I guess you thought we thought we were gonna like you walk in, it's like they're obviously gonna ask what happened, and they didn't even ask anything. We both just started crying, and it wasn't that we're crying because we're embarrassed of him or sad. Like it had been a long 3 months or whatever it was, and still shocked to get the answer you get, because no matter as a parent, no matter you just to actually hear it from a professional. But I guess very quickly after that, it was like, well, what do we do now? Yeah. Like we have to make sure Jacob gets the best therapy, and however much that is, we'll make it happen, because that's what you do as a parent. You obviously do whatever you have to do. And so it's been those, especially those first, I think, like looking back now, 8-9 months later, we were in a very good spot with it, and we enjoy talking about it, the awareness of it, and making the general public realize that it's such a common thing, and that
I think 1% of the population, I read last night, which is somewhere on the autism spectrum.
And that's probably the biggest thing that we want to put out.
Sorry.
Yeah, it is. Is that we would not have Jacob any other way. So we wouldn't change that Jacob got the diagnosis, because he's a beautiful soul and teaches us more every day than probably we're teaching him at the moment. But Jacob is Jacob and always has been and always will be. So we wouldn't take this away from him, because that's who he's been since he was born. It's just probably, obviously given that it's more of the developmental delays that the older he gets, the more challenges that we're seeing.
Joe, I read, and I'm really interested to talk to you guys about sensory rooms and the like. I read that you didn't tell Utah immediately, and you were sort of coming and going from basketball, but you weren't really invested at that little period of time.
Not at all.
So how did that play out for you?
I do feel bad, I guess, about that a little bit. But
well, how could you not, though, be like that?
Yeah, I guess... like Quinn did know really early on. Like I said, he knew
in the process before the diagnosis.
He knew the whole time, and purely because if we were in Utah, I wasn't going to miss an appointment or a meeting or whatever it was. So it was purely on the fact that, like, if we have practice at 10 and the meeting's at 10, like, I'm going to Jacob's thing, and that's my first priority, and that's like bad luck. Like, it's just, he was unbelievable with it. That's just.
He didn't miss anything, though, because I'm incredibly organized and made sure I scheduled everything outside of the jazz schedule.
You look extremely organized to me, right?
But just to have that support from him of like, if you need a day or whatever. But and I didn't realize at the time, and it was when Renee actually said at one time that on January 8th, on February 14 or whatever, when we put the exclusive inside article out, she said that was like the first day that I was back to normal, like that she'd got me back. And I guess looking back before that, I hadn't really realized, but you start to think about like what went on and whatever. And I remember now I went into practice for months on end and days and weeks and road trips and that, and would like, I usually walk in and I'm talking and laughing and like
hanging crap on something.
Yeah, like there's always something going on. And that's just my personality in general. But I walked in practice, walked out without talking to anyone. And I didn't really know it at the time. And at this point, kind of down the track a little, like a couple of my teammates knew. I'd spoken to a couple of them just because there was stuff going on that I wanted them to know that it wasn't just like me playing bad because I'm unfit or I'm missing. Like it was way more to that. And they, again, like Quinn, were like unbelievable. Like to have teammates that, same thing. Like if they're not playing well and we're not winning, they're potentially losing out on money and jobs. And to have a couple of guys early on, and then obviously a whole team that like would have like they've support, like they've been unbelievable. And to be able to like sit on the plane, and I would sit next to Ricky Rubio, to be able to sit on the plane and sit next to Ricky and like talk to him and be like, yeah, we've just had the worst day ever, like Jacob, this man, for him to like genuinely care, like you can like nod your head and like, yeah, it's tough, like hope everything's right. But to have someone that like genuinely cares, it's like it's unbelievable. So, I guess looking back, I wish I hadn't been like that for so long, but I didn't. I just felt like I had so much pressure to. I would be away to make sure Renee was okay, to make sure Jake was okay, and also not forgetting about our daughter. Like, we've got another kid as well.
Of course.
We had put so much time into Jacob. It was like, we can't forget about this little girl who's got so much going on in her life and she's developing so quickly and that. And so I guess I just felt so much pressure or I don't even know what it was to make sure everyone was okay that I had just forgotten about the rest of the world, really. Basketball, friends, everything. Like, I had Ruffy, guys like that that I speak to daily that I hadn't replied for. Like, looking back on that, 10, 15 messages that I just hadn't replied to because I was just in such a different world at that point, I guess.
Renee, I was speaking to someone the other day and I knew nothing about autism for about an hour and a half like this. Yeah. And they have an autistic child and, you know, you have children at the primary school my kids go to that are autistic and it's amazing how... I don't want to break any confidence here, but it's amazing how the kids, I've got a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old, how they make no differential at all.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
Or it's just like, oh, yeah, such and such, she's autistic, so, you know, we just make sure such and such. And they don't blink an eye.
Yeah.
Where I think back to if I was at school and we wouldn't have known what it was, what that child would have been subjected to.
Yeah. It's scary.
Yeah.
And I think probably the number one thing that Joe and I are asked is like what we find hardest about having a child on the spectrum. And I can honestly say that changes day to day. For instance, today my biggest concerns are and worry are the fact that Jacob at the moment is nonverbal. So if he's upset or struggling or having anxiety over something, he can't tell me what it is. So for us, it's a guessing game and eliminating things until maybe we get it right. Maybe we don't get it right. Maybe he just deals with it better. I don't know. So it's not knowing and it's finding those ways for him to communicate. I really struggle with on a day-to-day basis. Is he ever going to say mum? Is he ever going to say I love you? And today I'm finding that really hard. Whereas you flip back to yesterday and I'm okay with all of that. I'm like, he points, he's communicating, he might bring a car over to us, he'll take us over to the cupboard and point to his Pringles and that's what he's after today. So I'm fine with the nonverbal stuff, but yesterday my worry was about, well, what does his future look like? Is he going to have normal friendships and normal relationships? Is he going to get bullied at school? Is he going to go to normal school? How are his and Miller's relationships going to be? Is he going to play sport? It's really a seesaw and an up and down roller coaster of what we're worried about day to day. And I think one of the biggest things we've learned probably since the diagnosis day, because immediately went to future and what this is going to look like and what we have to do for the future, all of those things came to our mind. Probably the biggest lesson we've learned is to take it one day at a time, and that we cope so much better taking it one day at a time, me in particular, because I'm a planner and a perfectionist and like to know how things are going to look like. And now it's just, I think Jacob's helped us celebrate the small milestones and really just, whilst we'd like to say we're pretty grounded people, this just brought us back down a whole nother level. It just brings you back down to life,
I think. They say having kids gives you perspective. It did for me. My basketball was like, winning or losing is great, but like my kids and stuff is so much more important.
So what worries you? Renee's just talked about what worries her.
Yeah, what worries you? Funny, bit of a funny, but the first thing I asked was like, is he going to play basketball? Like that was...
Yeah.
Good, and we're good friends with Matt Rogers and Chloe, his wife, and his was like, is Max going to play rugby? Like, that's obviously like when you look back on it at the time, I'm like, what a stupid question that was. I think the same stuff. It's the bullying side of it, and especially because you see, like, I still. Like, I hate bringing up these like trolley type of people, but like reading things on our exclusive insight article and in the article, same thing. We said we wouldn't have Jacob any other way or whatever. And these people are like, well, if you wouldn't have him any other way, why would you put him in therapy? And blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, that's, you're so stupid. You're so ignorant to like, you're not going to put your kid in school because you don't like, of course you want your kid to be as like, keep learning and keep like
the best they can be.
Yeah. You're not going to put your kid in, not going to put him in school because you don't want them to be any other way. You're still going to put it like, it's just a some very like ignorant people. And that's, I think, where the awareness side of it and like people don't realize how expensive this whole thing is. And we're obviously very lucky what we were talking about earlier. We can get Jacob the best of the best and he'll be in everything he needs to be in until he doesn't need it anymore. But there's families that like it's 100, 120 grand a year. Like if you're a regular family that's dad's working, mum's might be at home with the kids, stay at home. I'm like, you've got a mortgage and a car. Like it's like
those numbers are unachievable.
It's impossible. There's people we know that like Jacob does 20 to 25 hours a week. There's people we know doing two because that's all they can afford. Like, so we obviously, like I said, are very lucky in the fact that we can put Jacob in all this, but that awareness side of it, the fundraising side of it, which we're obviously heavily involved in now, is something that we're really passionate about, the awareness of like making people talk about it. And we've had so many people, Renee's unbelievable at actually writing back to people and like communicating, but the amount of people that wrote to us and said that they felt like they told their story through us because we told them, they're like, yeah, we had exactly the same. This was that age and this happened and then we started this and that and this and that. And all of that was like, this is why we did it. We want people to talk about it. We got these tattoos because I want people to ask me about
You've
it.
You've got a
puzzle piece.
A puzzle piece when you're up. So
I'm going to have to take off on
yes,
that note.
You go.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, brother.
Sorry to leave it. This no, time no. of the thing, but Renee will give you a lot.
Not at all. I'm just going to hit pause. So the big fella's walked out to go and get Jacob.
Yes.
We're just talking about the tattoos. What do you reckon nirvana is for you as a parent of a beautiful little man who's going to face numerous situations along the way? What's nirvana for you now?
Honestly, all I care about is that Joe, Jacob and Miller are happy and healthy. At the end of the day, you want your kids to be passionate and striving for things that they want to do. And I think regardless of Jacob's diagnosis or not, that has not changed, not for Jacob nor for Miller. And we're going to give them the absolute best opportunity to succeed in their lives and to do things that they love. And we're going to give Jacob and Miller the same opportunities to do that, which is why Jacob's doing 25 to 30 hours a week of therapy at the moment.
And what does therapy mean for those that haven't been involved?
Yeah, so Jacob's doing a combination of ABA therapy, which they use for autism. It's applied behavior analysis therapy. And he's also doing a bit of EDSM, which is Early Start Denver Model, which I know that's going to sound like another language to people who aren't doing this, but basically he's doing that kind of therapy. He's also doing speech therapy, occupational therapy, and it's basically at the moment teaching Jacob life skills. So we're not sitting down with Jacob teaching him ABCs and 1-2-3s at the moment. It's teaching him life skills. And the very first skill that he learnt in his ABA therapy was eye contact. And it sounds so simple, but it was such a huge milestone for Jacob to be able to turn, look at us when we say his name, give us eye contact. And great, we've ticked that box. So it's as small as eye contact all the way through to like school curriculum. Now, we're really lucky that Jacob was diagnosed at 2.5. And one of the biggest things about us creating awareness for autism is that early intervention is the best thing that you can do for a child on the spectrum. So if there is any doubt in anyone's mind as to whether they should or shouldn't go through the diagnosis process, then we would absolutely advise anyone, yes, because at least go and do the assessment process and find out there wasn't a diagnosis rather than not do it and find out that there was a diagnosis that was missed and that early intervention opportunities weren't there. So what Jacob is doing at the moment is in his therapy is a lot of play-based life, social skills. One of the red flags, I guess, in us going and getting the assessment process was that he was very socially isolated. So he was interested in what adults were doing or what we were doing, but not at all his peers. So we would go to play groups or classes or fitness classes or whatever it was, and all of the kids would be down one end enjoying all of the entertainment, and Jacob would be down the other end of the room playing with a toy on his own, and be socially isolated. And then we started asking ourselves some questions. So now Jacob goes to a therapy center for 3 hours in the mornings, and he's in there with other kids. He's doing group activities. He's also working one-on-one with therapists in that time, but he's getting that those social skills and stuff as well. So it sounds so basic, and things that I guess with his twin sister, Miller, we don't even think about. She's chatting, she's talking, she's interacting, she's asking questions, whereas Jacob's not doing those things. So, you know, he's ticking boxes and he's reaching smaller milestones at the moment.
Reading about it again over the last couple of days, Renee, something that hit me, in some ways it's a really personal question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. It talked about the percentage of married couples that don't stay together. You've obviously read all this.
Absolutely.
Due to the situation that's going on. So how are you and Joe... It's one thing to say, wow, well, they've got all this money so they can throw money at a problem and they've got all this help. But the realistic side of it, you're living half your life in one country, half your life in another country, you're getting pulled in all sorts of directions. How do you and Joe go about keeping your relationship going, which is the key to anything moving forward, I guess?
No, I can say since... the day that Jacob was diagnosed, that first 2 weeks, I don't think I slept a wink because I read every fact and every brochure. I was on the internet till all hours of the morning watching documentaries, reading success stories, looking at studies. It was ridiculous and it got me nowhere. But one of the very first things that Joe and I actually did read was how high the divorce rate is with people with children on the spectrum. And it kind of hit us hard, but at the same time I'm glad we read that because I think it makes you invest in each other. And once we got through probably that first 2 to 4 weeks where it really was just so many questions after questions after questions and not knowing what things were going to look like, we sat down and we were able to actually just cipher through it. And I think sometimes we just have to stop and be. We've learned now to go out to dinner and not to talk about therapy and not to talk about kids. And that's a hard thing to do. You don't even realize you're doing it until you're doing it. And especially with the logistics of Joe's career and my career and in different spots and in different countries and in different training settings, the obvious thing to talk about when we get together again is the kids and where things are at and where therapy's at and logistically, and you can get a bit overwhelmed with that. I'm not going to lie or pretend that this hasn't been incredibly tough on Joe and I as a couple and on the four of us as a family. However, I know so deep down in my heart that regardless of anything, how much Joe has my back and vice versa, he would know that as well. So on the tough days, there might be a snide remark that goes backward forwards from one of us to the other or whatever it is, or raising the eyebrows. But at the end of the day, we're actually on the same team. And if there's one thing in our entire careers that Joe and I would like to pride ourselves on, or the legacy we'd like to leave, is that we're team players. And I think it's so easy to talk about that from a netball and a basketball perspective and, you know, all of the cliche lines about teamwork. But even before the kids, that's the way Joe and I have always run our lives. We're a really good team, and the four of us at home are a really good team, good and bad days. And I think that actually counts for a lot, is just having each other's back, especially on the bad days and not the good days. And I think our lives are tough. Like, and I know people look at us and think because we've got money that it's an easy fix. I can definitely confirm that it takes the financial stress away from Jacob's therapies, but it doesn't make day-to-day runnings of our lives any easier or any different.
But it is nice not to have that financial stress on top of it. But at the end of the day, we're a family of four that are managing careers and kids in different spots, and that's stressful. And then you add a child with special needs on that, and that's stressful as well. So one of the greatest things about Joe is whilst some days I might get, you know, angry that, I don't know, the washing wasn't done or the house isn't as clean as anything, whatever it is, or that he's home from practice later or whatever it is, at the end of the day, all I have to do is look across the room and see Joe and how hands-on he is with Jacob and Miller and his love for them and their absolute admiration for their dad. And at the end of the day, you tick that box, don't you? Because you've got happy and healthy kids with a dad who loves them. And whilst he has a crazy travel schedule, when he's home with us, he really is home with us. And that means a lot.
The last episode of the Howie Games, which is just about blowing up the download system, featured former England captain Michael Vaughan. Vaughan told some brilliant stories, including one about Freddie Flintoff after the famous 2005 Ashes win.
And I always remember going to this nightclub and then coming back to the hotel, and there was the room that they'd set up for the team, and all the family and guests were all in there. And Freddie had stayed in the hotel. He couldn't go out. There was too many people wanting to see him. So he stays in the hotel. I go with the team at about 3:30. My head switches on. I think, God, bit worse for wear, but I've got to do all the press at 7:30. Oof. Better get back. So I leave the team in Mahiki. I get back. There's cameras everywhere. They get back to the hotel. And I thought, I'll just go and check, see what's happening. And I'd left Freddie probably four hours early, pint of Guinness, white T-shirt, full of his mates from Preston. Like, he had them all the time. He's a good set of pals. And I thought, I'd just go and check. I walked in. He's there still, part of Guinness, not the same one, white tea. So I stroll up to him. All right, Fred. Yeah, all right, Scoop. I said, remember in the morning, 8:30, suited and booted downstairs in reception, got to go on that bus ride. He's looking at me and goes, no bugger will turn up. I said, we'll see anyway. So I go up to him and have a sleep. And then I kind of had 3 or 4 hours, wake up, get my suit on, go downstairs, get to the reception. And the manager, Phil Neal, he said, Skip, let's look outside the thousands. He said, everything's been pushed back by 30 minutes. Do us a favour, go up to the team room, sign the bats and all the shirts for all the charities. He said, once your moniker's on the team, we'll follow. I went, all right. So I kind of crawl up the stairs, turn right, the party room. I looked in, the big fella, jeans, white T-shirt, pint of Guinness.
Still going.
Still going. So I had to shout at me, Freddie, suited and booted, and I'll see you downstairs. Oh, Skip, yep, got one for the road. See you in an hour, mate. So I'm going to stand about, going upstairs, do the interviews. 8:30 comes off. There's no Flintoff. So the manager, Phil, says, Freddie, where is he? I said, I'll be here, don't worry. I'm thinking, there's no chance he never turn up. All of a sudden, he arrives down the stairs, and he just comes down, his suit obviously been done, he's tied by his missus, and he comes straight to me. I always remember he just comes up to me and he whispers in my ear and he goes, struggling, Skip.
That's former England cricket captain Michael Vaughan on episode 73 of the Howie Games. Alrighty, back to Joe and Renee.
Your netball career, illustrious to say the least. I just want to distill it more or less into two games.
Sure.
Obviously, the World Cup, World Championship side of things, but I guess for the Australian viewing audience, it's the Commonwealth Games. Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to be at Delhi in 2010 with Channel 10 and in Glasgow in 2014, where you won't remember, but I actually met you and Joe after you'd won the gold medal. It must have been right at the end of the Commonwealth Games. We were out having a few beers. Through a fellow by the name of Andrew Jansen, I think.
I actually remember this.
Right.
Yeah, I can remember the old pub that we were in.
That's it. Yep, but 2010, Luke Darcy, AFL commentator, was commentator of the netball that time.
Yep.
Probably alongside Lizzie Ellis, I presume.
Yep.
Were you on the court right at the end of that match?
I played the entire full time, four quarters, and then I was taken off the court for extra time.
Okay, so for those that aren't aware,
that was like the longest netball game ever.
How many extra time? What happened in the end?
We played double extra time, and then it went to playing for as long as it goes for until the other team win by two.
Because
we kept drawing in double overtime.
Okay, so you're on the bench at this stage. You played your heart out.
Mm.
The final shot for the Kiwis go in.
Yeah.
What's happening
I still actually remember that day and that feeling, because that was heartbreaking. And I actually had to hold on to that feeling for a couple of years, because from that Commonwealth Games, I was the only player dropped from that team leading into the World Championships in 2011, which the Diamonds went and won. So that was almost like their redemption.
Why were you dropped?
Performance. I remember the camp that we came into, and it was before a tour to Jamaica in the January, and the coaches just sat me down and said, need you fitter, stronger, more powerful. We're just going to change it up. We need something fresh. Go away and do all these things. And
so they all got redemption?
Yes.
And you didn't?
Yes. Yes. So I remember being really devastated. I was a mess, actually, when I missed out on the World Championships, because I'd wanted to be at World Championships. I'd worked for that for about 4 years up to that date and missed out. And I remember thinking when we'd come home from Delhi, whilst it was an amazing game on the world stage for netball and for everyone to see that, I remember thinking, I didn't just run a race and get a silver. I lost a game and got silver. So I wasn't really as proud as I should have been to come home with a silver medal from a Commonwealth Games. I felt like we'd lost the gold, and I still had that burning desire in me, well, it's World Championships next year. We'll go away and we'll beat the Kiwis and we'll get the gold medal. And I got to watch all my mates do that.
Did you watch the match?
I did. I actually watched it from Adelaide.
How was that, Renee?
Tough. Oh. But do you know what? I missed out on that January tour, and I remember thinking, right, I've got about 6 months to try and work my way back into this team, and that's going to depend on how I play at the Melbourne Vixens that year. And I didn't play very well, because I played trying to make a team, and that's not the right way to do it. And in hindsight, that's an easy thing to say, a harder thing to do, especially when you're a young athlete. And I felt like I had things to prove. And I said, you know what, I need to learn more. I need to do more. I need to step out of my comfort zone. I've played here in Melbourne for 7 years professionally now. I don't feel like I'm getting any better. I'm comfortable. And I actually, whilst the girls are at World Championships, signed with the Adelaide Thunderbirds. And I remember watching the World Championships game from Adelaide after I'd just signed a contract and went, right, this is why I've done this. This is my next 4 year journey. And I want to be on that podium in 4 years' time in Sydney.
Wow.
And I was.
And you were.
Yes.
And conversely, as I said, I saw you in Glasgow. I'm not sure if you actually had your medal on. You may have.
We did. And I'm not sure I took it off.
Right. So what's it like? Were you on the court at the end of that match?
I was. Yep.
So the best thing about doing this podcast is so few athletes get to the top without being smashed along the way. You've just told us how you were smashed. Mm. What is it like when you've done that work and then you are there and it's the same team,
yep,
but the different result?
Complete euphoria. It was just, I'd worked so hard for that moment, and I'd actually made huge decisions in my life to move away from home, to move teams that I was very loyal to, a club that I'd wanted to captain when I was growing up. I felt like I'd made huge sacrifice and had to move interstate and do 3 really hard years of work, not only to get myself back into the Australian team, but to get that gold medal and to stand on the podium in Glasgow. And I actually had my parents and Joe there, and to look up into the crowd and be able to go, yep, we did this. I did it. This is what I wanted was, you know, pretty cool.
What's it like as a female athlete? And at the highest profile levels, obviously Serena's done it. She's had a baby and she's come back to professional sport. You had twins. Mm. You were away from the sport. You've come back to the sport. How different is, I don't want to say it's the wrong way, but how different is the female body coming back after childbirth to play professional sport at the elite level?
It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It's amazing, yeah.
I know. I don't think I gave my body, especially before kids, enough credit. And the hard work that you do to get fit and strong and all of those things. I think from a physical perspective, my body is probably not where it was before I had kids, but I'm so much more mentally strong that my body does more than what it did when I was fit and strong.
I genuinely
believe that. I just think parenthood and motherhood gives you this entire new perspective on life, and especially on my career of netball. And I've never, ever taken anything for granted in my career. However, since having kids, the difference in my mindset is incredible. I wish I could shake a younger Renee, or I wish I'd had kids earlier in my career.
So how's the mindset changed?
So much stronger, so much tougher. And just I've always been an athlete that has wanted to do absolutely everything right in order to be the absolute best I could be, to do the most for my team, to make the Australian Netball Diamonds and win gold medals as a team and do all of those things. However, I thought every single thing had to be done, whereas now I think it's just being a parent, it's about prioritising. So A, B, C needs to be done. If D gets done, great, but if it doesn't, it's not going to affect my performance on game day. And do you know what? It doesn't. Whereas it would have before kids, because I'd go into a game thinking,
I haven't done this.
Yeah, yep. And my mindset hasn't changed before and after kids in terms of the actual physical training I do. I still want to be the hardest worker out there. I still want to train the hardest. I want to leave no leaf unturned, no stone unturned in terms of what I'm doing in my preparation for game day. However, if that doesn't look perfect, it absolutely doesn't matter. And you know, I don't get nervous on game days anymore. I see getting to run out there and play netball now as a huge bonus to being a mum and getting to show my kids what I do, because I was always that athlete coming through saying, oh, my God, well, I have kids. I'm not going to come back on the netball court. And look at me, I've played another 3 years. Yeah. And I really, really enjoy it. But it's a bonus time, I guess, me time away from the kids, but it's not necessarily about crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's. It's about going there, giving the quality, and the second training finishes, I'm usually one of the quickest just to get home to the kids because I miss them so much. Yeah. As ridiculous as it sounds,
I told you this morning, I texted you saying, "Righto, I'm on the way," and you filled me with joy saying that you'd listen to some episodes of the podcast.
I have.
Which was it fills me with a ridiculous amount of joy, to be honest. And this morning, my beautiful wife Erica is away on a trip with the girls. So you also realise what your partner does when you're there. And I was struggling to get them out of the door. And frequent listeners know I often get a question from my kids.
Okay.
Ooh. Ask them. Now, my son, the big penguin, had one for Joe, but in the midst of trying to make a toasted sandwich for him this morning and get his footy gear ready, we didn't get to record it.
Okay.
But my daughter, we were prepared because she was Googling you last night. And we did this last night.
I'm scared of what this question is going to be. So she was Googling.
She just wanted to know a bit more about your career. This is from my daughter who's nine.
Okay.
She operates as the pickle. This is her question for you.
Hi, Renee. Pickle here. I play for the Bluebirds in the under-10s, but the umpires, well, they tell us off for everything. They tell us off for going offside. They tell us off for going stepping, and they tell us off for not putting our feet on the line. They tell us off for everything. It makes me crazy. Were the umpires like that when you were younger?
It's fair income when I watch her, and they do a beautiful job.
She must be a clever little girl.
Well, the umpires are like the mafia down there. Like, the game would have 70 interruptions for instruction and free passes, et cetera.
Yep.
And I understand that that's the way that needs to be done. But she's getting frustrated with it. Were your umpires like that? And does it pay off in the long run?
Oh, aren't umpires sticklers for the rules? Oh, can you believe it?
In netball, though. Wow.
Oh, come on, the pickle's going to get me in trouble if I say something too controversial.
Talking about when you're a little one.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was that. But that only makes it, I mean, that's going to help. In terms of learning all the rules, all of that thing, staying within the guidelines. And look, umpires stay just as tough now. I hate to break it to her.
Do that.
Make sure she doesn't leave the sport because of it.
Right.
But we couldn't play our game and certainly couldn't play the game at the level that we do without the umpires. So what we have to remember at the end of the day, whether it's umpires back at junior level or here at Super Netball or on the international stage, is that umpires are human too and they've got a job to do.
Nice answer.
We've just got to stay within their rules, don't we?
So what she also wanted to ask,
Where does your foot need to be? A real specific netball question here for all the netballers. When you get a free pass out of court.
Throw-in?
Yes, a throw-in. Where does your foot need to be in relation to the line? Because she's telling me.
This is tough.
Because if it's too far away, the opposition gets it. If your foot's too close or gets on the line, the opposition gets it. Where's your foot meant to be, Ren?
You have to make an attempt to step up to the line.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
So I hope there's no umpires listening to this, but I think if the line's there, right, and I know this is not a visual representation, but you can back me up here.
Yes.
If I look down at the line, like I'm, making an attempt and then throw and go, then it's okay.
Okay.
So I reckon if the umpire sees you look that you're making an attempt to step up to the line, as long as you're not on the line, you should be okay.
I will pass that on to her because I reckon she got pinned about
nine times
last week. Oh. And that was why she was getting a touch frustrated.
Great question.
She
Great
will
question,
be very,
Pickles.
Very, very happy with that answer. what happens? This is a question I wanted to ask you, but I didn't want to ask you when Joe was here.
Okay.
What's it like? He's the unflashiest NBA player I've ever met.
Science teacher, people call him.
Well, that's what they call him, the science teacher.
Slow mojo.
Slow mojo, or the maths teacher.
Yep.
Answer this any way you will. Answer it carefully. Do you sit with the wives and partners at a game of your teammates?
Yeah, we all have a family area.
Right.
Which pretty much all of the families all sit together, but there are also some season ticket holders in that space as well.
And are the partners as often as rock star as the basketballers?
Some of them,
right.
Yes. I think it's definitely lower key in Utah.
In Utah, rather than if you're playing for the Lakers.
Correct. Okay. And most of the season is completed in full snow in Utah. So, you know, wearing your stiletto heels into the game in the snow with your massive snow jacket isn't always the most practical. No, look, it's a really, really good bunch of girls. We're obviously going into a new season now. There's actually been quite a few changes in the lineup. So, get to meet a whole new bunch of families. I know that quite a few of them have kids, which is exciting. There's a really cool family room down there and all the kids get to hang out and stuff. So whilst, yes, there is that, I guess, wag generalization, it's pretty easy going in Utah and everyone fits in pretty well. But I'm probably the most relaxed in terms of outfits and what I wear to the games. I think the first couple of years I really felt pressure. I was like, oh my God, NBA, everyone's going to be looking. Yep. And then I got over that pretty quickly because there's 82 games a year. I don't have that many cool outfits.
That's a lot of home games, isn't
it? That's exactly right.
So. You're coming to the end of your netball career
for the second time. Yeah.
What will it be? Because you've walked off the court once and know what that felt like.
Yeah.
And obviously the game drew you back. What's it going to be like when you walk off the court this time, do you reckon?
I'm more excited this time. I know that I'll miss netball because I love the game. That's obvious. That was the same when I finished last time. But I'm genuinely excited for what's next for our family. And I think the thing that I'll miss the most is just being a part of a team. I really, really love this Melbourne Vixens team. Do I have a huge amount of desire to go to training and to work hard with all of them? Yes. I'll have to find another fitness journey for me. Probably Kokoda next year is going to be that, but then what next? I'm not sure.
You and Joe are doing Kokoda?
Yes,
raise awareness and funds?
Yep, to raise awareness and funds for our charity for ASD Kids. And we've got 24 very willing people who are coming to do that with us, which we're really excited
about.
Have
you been to Papua New Guinea before?
No, I haven't. I'm going to struggle with the camping big time.
Mm.
Joe's going to struggle with the hiking big time. So it's going to be an experience, but that's what it's about, stepping outside our comfort zone. So I'm really excited for that. Look, I know I'm really going to miss netball, but I'm also really going to enjoy watching on with netball. And I just, the logistics of going backwards and forwards this year was really, really tough and exhausting. Given Jacob's diagnosis, that makes it even a little bit more challenging. So I'm just excited to be with the family, find what my next thing is. It's been an incredibly busy year. I've just finished my master's in high performance sport last month. And then I know that I'm finishing up in netball. So I kind of feel like I'm going to go to Utah and be a little bit bored for a while.
So you followed through. You didn't just
pay for the course and never actually log
Correct.
On.
Correct. I followed
a few if yes. you've got to the master's
yeah,
level.
That's exactly well,
congratulations.
Right. Thank you very much. But I'm making my parents and Joe all sign contracts to not let me do anything, just to make me be bored over this Christmas period this year, because I'm not very good at being bored, and I jump in and want to get my hands dirty and do more, but I think it's just come time in our lives to just kick back and relax a little bit when the kids are in school and Joe's at practice and all of those sorts of things. So
sounds like it. Last question for you. Yeah, we'll see. Oh, I like to see those contracts. Yeah. You just mentioned the charity.
Yeah.
Just tell me again the name of the charity, how people can get involved in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, so we're really, really excited and really passionate, I guess, about being on board at 4ASD Kids. And it's a charity that was started 10 years ago by Matt Rogers and Chloe Maxwell. Their son, Max, as Joe mentioned earlier in the podcast, is on the spectrum. I think one of the biggest learnings that both they had and that we had over this journey is that it's really stressful getting the diagnosis or even going through the diagnosis process. So 4ASD Kids is there for education, support and also financial support for early intervention and kids that are on the spectrum, because it's a huge financial burden on families, and both of us as families are lucky enough to be in a position to get our kids the therapy that they need, but not all families are. And Joe and I, especially once Joe had signed his new contract, we've always talked about how we needed to give back to the community that have given so much to us. We just didn't know what that was going to look like, or the right charity or people or what it was that we should join and put all our efforts and energy into, I guess. And as soon as Jacob got the diagnosis, that very day we were like, right, this is what's meant to be. This is Jacob was given to us for a reason, and let's give back to the autism community, raise awareness, get people talking about it and asking the right questions to support people and families, and then hopefully raise some really important funds so that families can get their children the help that they need.
Renee, I have been blown away by chatting with you and Joe. Best of luck for the rest of the netball season.
Thank you.
The next trip back to Utah, the contract that you're going to sign to do bugger all, to everything that you've got ahead of you with Jacob and Miller. Thanks
Thank
for joining
you.
Me on the Howie Games. It's going to be an episode that blows people's socks off. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Howie.
Quite a story the Ingalls have to tell. Thanks to the both of them for telling it with such honesty. The charity, once again, just Google 4ASD Kids. Little Jacob bowled into the kitchen at the completion of this episode after a morning at therapy and basically took charge of the house. He is a ripping little man. Thanks again to Joe and Renee. Thanks also to Darcy Thompson for putting the whole thing together, and to Kim Norman and a sales team at Podcast One for all their hard work and faith in the show. Until Thursday, August 29, with Andrew Gaze. Peace and love.
And we can do it if we try, try, try. If we try, try, try. If we try, try, try.
Listener.